Hello, and welcome to the 404 Media Podcast, where we bring you unparalleled access to hidden worlds, both online and IRL. 404 Media is a journalist-founded company and needs your support. To subscribe, go to 404media.co. As well as other bonus content, subscribers can hear us answer their questions in future podcasts. Ask us anything you want on podcast at 404media.co. I'm your host, Joseph, and with me are two of the 404 Media co-founders, the first being Emmanuel Mayberg.
Hey, what's up?
And Jason Kebler.
I'm back. I'm back.
You're back. Sam's gone. We can never be in, you know, we can never do a podcast together. We're recording a subscribers only one.
Well, what if the podcast has a plane crash? We can't all be in the same podcast room at the same time.
That really threw me off guard. I was not expecting
That's, you know, the president and the vice president don't travel together. It's like and at the State of the Union, they pull out one designated survivor. They made an entire film about this whole movie.
Yes. Now you're putting it in terms I understand. Designated survivor. Yes, now I know what you're talking about. The really crap show. All right. Let's hit the ground running with a few stories here. The first one is one that Emmanuel wrote just a few hours ago. Service jobs now require bizarre personality test from AI company. We'll get into the AI aspect, obviously, but Emmanuel, just to communicate how surreal this is, can you list some of the scenes that this piece of software shows people when they're applying for a job? Like, it's very strange.
Yeah, so what you're doing basically is you apply for a job. In my case, it was a bartending job at Olive Garden in New Mexico. And you go through some normal and annoying job application stuff, you know, listing your previous experience. And then when that is done, you are sent to another section of the application process run by this company called Paradox. And this is called Stratify. It's what they call this personality assessment, essentially, is what it is. And these are not entirely new. People need to do personality assessment type tests for other jobs all the time. This one is just weird because it is very visual. And what you're doing is you're clicking through a series of 3D rendered images featuring this blue humanoid alien named Ash. Imagine Avatar via direct-to-DVD movie.
I don't think we're illegally allowed to say Avatar. Are we doing copyright? They're doing copyright? But it does look like Avatar.
It's just like, it's a blue, very, I don't know, like Unity Asset Store alien 3D model is what it looks like. and it just shows you this character, Ash, in a series of situations, and you need to respond whether you can say either me or not me. And this allegedly helps Paradox and therefore the hiring manager kind of see what your personality is. And some of the images, you know, there's an image at the top of the article and you see Ash standing over a table of diners at a restaurant. I think it might even be an Olive Garden restaurant if you look at his little apron.
Yes. I guess maybe because you didn't apply to multiple jobs, so you don't know, but maybe that is specifically for that client, or is that fair? Or
I do know that, like, one of the things they advertise about this service is that they will modify the test with your branding. So right. If you're hiring at Olive Garden, they'll make like Olive Garden aesthetic tweaks, and if you're hiring at FedEx, they'll make like FedEx tweaks. That's one of the perks they tout. But yeah, so it's like in this image, it just shows like a customer service situation and says open to feedback, and you say either me or not me. That's sort of like you can guess what they're going for there, like what they're trying to assess. But some of them are very, very strange. There's the ones that are included in the article, and I recommend people look at that. But since we're on the podcast, I'm going to do some bonus content and talk about some slides that are not in the story. And I'm looking at one right now, and it shows Ash from like an overhead shot, and he has just finished raking a bunch of leaves, and more leaves are falling down from the tree, and he's looking up at the sky like, God, why me? And it just says, give me a break. And it's like, I mean, I guess that means like, oh, you're willing to put up with annoying tasks, but it's a little vague, you know? Right. And then I'm looking at another one, and it's Ash, and he's in some sort of like robot workshop, putting together a robot, and it says innovative, which again, I mean, I suppose that is useful if you're hiring if you're hiring for a software job, but how does that apply to a bartending job at Olive Garden? I'm not sure.
Yes. Dude, creative mixology at Olive Garden.
I don't know if you get that kind of leeway at Olive Garden.
Well, I mean, we could go on about how surreal they are for ages, and I kind of want to, but I recommend people do go just look at the images, because obviously we can't really show you right now, but like they're very, very bizarre. But beyond them just being weird, I mean, to bring this more about, you know, the labor aspect here, people seem, I think justifiably, pretty annoyed that they're being asked to jump through like these weird ass hoops just to apply for a job that they just look, just, I don't know, give me an interview and then go from there or whatever. Like, one person complains they just want a dishwashing job, whatever. I mean, what is the labor aspect here? Is it just like another point of friction that like people have to pull up with and that sucks? Or like, what's the labor part here?
I think it's mostly the latter. Anyone who is listening to this, probably like me, has applied to a million jobs and knows what a soul-crushing experience that can be. It's just a ton of annoying online forms. You make a PDF, you make a cover letter, you send that in, then they're like, guess what? You have to fill out all these fields individually anyway. It just like the job application process as is, it's just very time-consuming and annoying. And this is a whole new layer of it. Paradox on his website says that it's very quick and that most people who are presented with this test complete it. And they say it only takes 2.5 minutes on average. That might be true, but it's like another step and it's another 2.5 minutes on top of like a series of other tasks you have to do in order to even like submit your application. So I think that is mostly the point of friction. And then also, I mean, there is the more abstract aspect to this, which is what we're seeing people who are encountering this in the wild is what they say. And it's like, I'm trying to get a dishwashing job at Olive Garden, which is a completely good job that is necessary. And I'm not like putting it down in any way, but it's like, why do you need to know about like my creative process in group settings in order to hire me to bartend or wash dishes or whatever it may be?
Let me just do the job, man. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm good at the job. Here are my references. Here's my experience. It's like, do you wanna do it or not? You know? Yeah.
So these types of personality tests are not new. It's like, I applied for a job at Costco when I was 16, I believe, and I was asked to do what I believe was this test. Like, it was a similar test where it was like, is this you or is this not you, blah blah blah,
like, manual, the underlying methodology sort of thing.
Like, the questions, there was no pictures, there was no imagery. It was just like, there were longer questions because these just have short phrases and some of them are like not in English, but it's like the questions were, if I remember correctly, this was over half of my lifetime ago, which is terrifying, but it was like it was like, you see Nancy steal like 6 cents out of the cash register. Do you tell on her or no? Yes or no? And it was like 50 questions like that. And then you got a score at the end. And there's like a variety of different personality tests that have been given for hourly wage jobs that don't require like specific expertise. I was like a 16-year-old dumbass. I didn't have any qualifications. I also didn't get the job, for what it's worth. But as Emmanuel mentions in the piece, there's like a body of research that suggests that, one, these personality tests are not terribly accurate, and two, that they have like sort of systematically been used to like disenfranchise people of color, because the quote unquote like good score, like I don't have the science in front of me, but like systematically these types of tests have been used to like further entrench power of like the majority or like the normal, which is has always typically been like straight white male capitalist, you know, wants to work overtime, blah, right. blah, blah. Like it's just been, it's like entrenching like standard systems of power. And what I think is really interesting is that one, I think people are kind of put off by imagine that you are a genderless, raceless alien for the purpose of this test.
Right.
Like you're Ash, like you are this blue alien living in like a futuristic society. And it's like, yo, I just want a dishwashing job.
Right.
And two, so specifically it is like a blue genderless alien because they are trying to be sensitive to the fact that not everyone applying is a specific gender or a specific race. But like the underlying purpose of these personality tests is to like systematically exclude people who don't have the correct type of personality. And so it's not good. Like that's a very long way of saying it's like it's got this sheen of like we are inclusive, but like the reason that McDonald's is doing a personality test in the first place is that like if you don't answer it correctly, they are going to exclude you from getting the job.
Right. Sorry, just because Jason mentioned McDonald's, Emmanuel, who else is actually doing, because we're not even talking hypothetical. You applied for the Olive Garden job. Jason mentioned McDonald's. What other companies are using this or appear to be using this?
Almost everyone, it seems like. So you have McDonald's, you have FedEx, you have this restaurant group that manages Olive Garden and some other franchises. You have GM, just like tons of companies and not like small mom and pop shops either, just like gigantic corporations that do hiring across the country.
Yeah. You were going to say something, I think, to bounce off Jason's point.
I think it's funny how transparent some of the slides become. Like a really good one is Ash is walking out of an office and there's a clock above his head. And you can see that the clock says that it's exactly 6 minutes after five. And he's waving goodbye to another coworker who is still working. And it says, no overtime. And you're supposed to respond, to like, me or not me. And that's just like, that's just Olive Garden being like, we're going to ask you for more than we are saying officially on paper. Is that cool?
Yes.
And you're like, no. And they're like, okay, that's useful information for us.
Right. Yeah. Filter you out immediately.
Some of the questions feel like they are weighted more than others.
Yeah, fair. What is the AI component here? Because like, as Jason said, he did a personality quiz like this years and years ago. It's sort of the same underlying quiz, right? But there is like this new sheen, this new branding to it. And there is an AI component, but it's like ever so slight, right? Like what is the AI component?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think AI has anything to do with the test itself. It seems what Paradox is offering in terms of AI is just automating a lot of the busy work around setting up interviews, which I understand as someone who has hired and has done like a lot of interviews and stuff. It's a lot of busy work, coordinating, sending emails, when are you available, blah, blah, blah. And that part is done via an AI agent, seemingly always called Olivia. And it's just a tool between the hiring manager and the applicant. It will text the applicant. It will message the hiring manager and kind of coordinate that for you, which sounds nice on its face. Like, okay, maybe that's a thing that you can automate and is useful for people and doesn't like displace any jobs. And that might be the case. I don't know. I just know that I was like looking online on Reddit, both applicants and hiring managers were confused and unhappy with the process. So you have applicants who are like, who is Olivia? Clearly, this is not a real person. Is this a scam? And then you have hiring managers complain that when engaged in this way, at least a couple of people were like, it's easy for applicants to say yes to interviews and then not show up. So you get a lot of people who kind of go through the automated process, but then don't actually show up for the interview. And they found that frustrating.
Yeah, it reminds me of a story we did a few weeks ago. I don't think we spoke about it on the podcast, but there was basically like an issue with some sort of recruiting platform and hackers managed to get in and they saw all of this data that was sensitive about job applicants and that sort of thing. And I think there was a Burger King in there and various other things, a KFC as well. But I remember going through sort of the responses that people were clearly giving to this chatbot, which is supposed to help you hire. And the chatbot would ask these questions and then the responses would just be like single words or like two words or something like that, because it's annoying to speak to a fucking chatbot. Like, it sucks. It's like, why am I going to give this chatbot the time of day, let alone, you know, spend all this time talking to it? I just want to talk to a human, and that sucks.
I mean, that's really, it's annoying, Joe. It's like, it's just like, it's annoying. Like, I did this test and I was shocked by how many slides it is. They say 60. I counted 80. That I went through.
That doesn't sound like 2.5 minutes. It doesn't.
I mean, I was documenting things as I go, so it obviously took me a long time, not the amount of time it take a normal person, but it's annoying. I can confirm that it is annoying. I have done the reporting and it is in fact annoying.
Well, that's the confirmation that we strive for.
Yeah.
Well, the fact that whether this thing is really fucking annoying or not.
Can you swipe on it or no? Or do you have to click?
I think you have to click. I saw a lot of screenshots from applicants posted to Reddit, and they did it on mobile, but I think it was still a button.
Because it's been a decade since I've been on Tinder, but if you can like swipe left, right, like 80 in 2.5 minutes, I don't know.
Cut this. We're pitching this.
Cut it.
Cut it. We need it. That's a business idea.
Well, I would love to flip it where the AI could actually work for the job applicant rather than the employer, right? And if we could find a way to, you know, make your job application so much easier to then fight back against all this AI, I think that'd be great.
I think you're describing people using ChatGPT for their cover letters.
Basically, yes.
It does happen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 1,000,000%. You mentioned Reddit. And, you know, some people are complaining the results are not accurate. Let's have a look at Emmanuel's results. So it says here, tools to use, independent thinker, okay, skilled at controlling
workflow. That sounds like I don't believe in vaccines, but go on.
Yeah. Okay, well, those I don't really agree with. Let's read this one. Difficulty accommodating others' emotional needs. I mean, this is bang on. There we go. This test is great. No, I'm joking. Obviously, I don't know. It's kind of all over the place. Like,
and this is the thing about personality tests, and like the science of it is not rock solid, where it's sort of like a horoscope. It's like you read the thing and you're like, oh yeah, that fits me, but
that
it's
applies
like
to me.
I mean, it's suggestive, right? Yeah.
But I mean, what did you actually think about the results? I mean, is it just like
it felt like not off? It felt like pretty good. Yeah, it felt fairly accurate.
Right.
Maybe that's because it was like flattering mostly. I don't know.
Yeah. Sure.
There's a few in here that I don't think are Emmanuel. There's like, it says he has a low tolerance for repetitive tasks. And it's like, I've known Emmanuel to just like bang out like an hour of really, really boring stuff while doing other tasks. Just like in
I enjoy it. That's
like
true.
Day. Yeah.
That's fair.
Prone to feeling stressed is like, Emmanuel has like very low, like no stress, and then he has like level 12 stress. There's like no like in between. It's like
I'll take it.
Fair. I guess just beyond the labor aspect that we already spoke of, and just this increased automation in hiring and labor, which of course will have efficiencies, but then, you know, it absolutely sucks as a human, like applying to these things. I guess just the most important question is, did you get the job at Olive Garden, Emmanuel?
Dude, not even a callback, as that's usual.
I mean, I think that's fair when it says prone to perfection. I'm just reading out a random one. I don't know. All right. Let's leave that there, but we're definitely going to keep an eye on many more stories about labor and automation and AI in some form. I think we have some more in the pipeline for that. After the break, we're going to talk about an open source search engine that Jason tried out. We will be right back after this.
So my 404 Media colleagues probably remember when I got doxxed, which was a nightmare for everyone involved, mostly me. My name, address, phone number, social security number, and a bunch of other information was leaked online, which led to all these spam calls, harassment, threats, etc. Even if you're not a journalist, a sophisticated network of data brokers is making your personal information available to the highest bidder. I fixed my problem with DeleteMe, which is a service that basically looks you up on all these people search websites and data broker websites and formally gets you removed from them. The subscription service removes your personal info from the largest search databases on the web, helping prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I'm a real DeleteMe customer. I've been using it for more than 5 years. Sign up is so easy. You just go to their website and then they send you personalized privacy reports showing you what info they found, where they found it, and how they got it removed. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for DeleteMe, now with a special discount for our listeners. Today, get 20% off your DeleteMe plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/404media and use promo code 404media at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/404media and enter code 404media at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/404media, code 404media.
And we are back. As mentioned, Jason wrote this one. This guy has built an open source search engine as an alternative to Google in his spare time. It's also in his basement, as the piece makes clear. Jason, what is Strakt? Is that how you pronounce it?
Strakt, yeah.
So what's the deal?
So I talked to this guy, Michael Denker. He lives in Copenhagen and he is a master's student. And for his master's dissertation or thesis, it's a master's thesis, right? Doctoral dissertation.
Dude, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I can't really read. So it's a master for his master's thesis. He did a project that was basically like, I'm going to help people search their files. Like I'm going to basically like build a search engine for people's files on their computer, which, you know, it does exist. It's called Spotlight, like on Mac, but he built, you know, that was what his research was into. Like, mm-hmm. Is there another way of doing this? And while he was doing this, he got the idea of like, I'm just going to make a new search engine for the internet, like an entirely new search engine. And the reason that he wanted to do this is because, one, he's like an open source guy, like, you know, software deserves to be free and open source, et cetera, et cetera. Like there's an ideological bent behind it. But one of his like guiding principles is like, Google is not just the dominant search engine. Like Google does over 90% of all searches on the internet. I bet it's probably higher than that, to be honest, like in many countries, but mm-hmm. Google is 90%. And then Bing does something like 8.5%. And then DuckDuckGo does like 0.5%. This is just based on like numbers from a year or two ago that I found while I was researching this article. I can't speak to their current accuracy, but that, sure. That feels right to me. But basically you have Google and then you have Bing. And then DuckDuckGo uses Bing. So when you use DuckDuckGo, you're really just getting Bing. Mm-hmm. And then there's something called Startpage, which also kind of just uses Google, like more or less. And then there is a new search engine, which I'm going to be writing about at some point, which I think is really exciting, actually, called Kagi. And it's like K-A-G-I. And it is a paid search engine. Like you pay a monthly subscription fee to use it. It doesn't have ads. But Kagi also doesn't really have its own search engine. It's using Google and it's using Bing and it's using a few others. And then it's aggregating those. So you're kind of just getting like a mix of search engines that already exist.
They're kind of all feeding off each other, basically. Even the alternatives are still feeding off the big players.
Exactly. And so there's like this Google hegemony, and then there is Bing, but like it's basically like Google and Bing. Like they're responsible for something like 99% of all searches on the internet. And as we've been covering, it's like these search engines are sort of getting denatured over time with the advent of artificial intelligence spam, SEO practices that are designed specifically to game Google, et cetera, et cetera. And so he was like, I'm going to start from scratch and I'm going to make a new one. And that's why I think this project is so interesting, because it would be relatively easy. And there are a lot of search engines that look like they're not Google, but just are Google, like in the back end. But he has built his own web crawler. And so he is crawling the web himself and indexing. He's like indexing all of these pages himself. And for that reason, Stract is not very good right now.
It's not like, yet. Yeah.
Not yet. Although people have said it's like surprisingly useful, like it usable.
So before we get into that, I just want to stress like how big of a task it is to like build your own indexer. Like it's not like building your own web crawler. Like I've built that. I'm gonna scrape these certain pages or whatever. This is different. You're basically doing what Google did years and years ago from scratch yourself to make your own product. That's already crazy in its own right. And, you know, we'll see how that progresses. You said it's not that good yet, but like, what is the usability like? Like you go on, is it like awash with ads like Google is? I presume not, because that's the entire point. Like how is it to actually use?
It looks great. It's very like bare bones. It looks like Google used to look, and like Google still sort of looks. It's just a search bar. It says Stract, independent and open search. And then you type in your search and then you click search. And then it also has an option to use an optic, which we'll talk about in 1 second. But basically, it's very fast. I was surprised by like it worked like Google works. It's like there was no lag, there was no delay. I asked him like, is this going to scale if you have millions of people doing millions of searches on it? And he seems to think that it will be okay. But like right now, Stract is doing, he said like 3,000 to 4,000 searches an hour.
That's not bad. So that's, you know, it's not nothing.
It's more than I thought he was going to say. Like there are people who are using this as one of their main search engines. My issue and like I think it's a very cool project. I'm being very like, I think that it deserves a lot of leeway, et cetera. It's like the biggest criticism of Stract thus far by people who have tried it is that it's indexed like a couple hundred million pages, I believe. The internet has billions and billions and billions of pages. And so it's only indexed like a small portion of the internet. And so I went in there and I typed like newyorktimes.com. I just typed like New York Times Trump or something. And like no New York Times links came back, like none.
Good.
And that's because the New York Times hasn't been indexed by him yet.
Oh, I see.
For like a variety of different reasons. And, you know, to his credit, it's like he's one guy who's been doing this in his spare time. He's defending his master's now and is about to start working on this full time. He's gotten like more people to start contributing to it because it's an open source thing. Anyone can contribute to it. And he's crawling the internet like pretty quickly. So it's getting better every single day. And that's obvious because I'm on the project's Discord and I could see people being like, this didn't work yesterday. Now it works today. Like he's working on it really actively and in real time, which I thought was kind of cool to see. It's like, I couldn't find 404 media pages on there, which is...
Now I know why you're being so critical of this single yeah. guy trying to make a search engine in his basement. Just very, very briefly on the basement thing, it's like a horrible stereotype of the hacker in the basement, but here it actually applies because he brought it up himself, right? But it's running on like two bare metal machines, which is crazy. They're just like physical machines. You know, he's not in a data center or anything. It's literally going out of the basement. You mentioned optics. What is that exactly? Because that's kind of interesting.
So this is what I think is probably the most interesting part of Strakt, is he's designed these sort of like plugins that people can add to search. It's like the so he also designed his own search algorithm, like, which is very interesting as well. Yeah. And it's like, he's designed it so that it is user editable and it takes your own feedback in a way that is not like, not in the same way that Google does, where it's like knows your location and knows your browsing history and all of that sort of thing. As a user of Strakt, you're able to give it specific feedback about what you do and do not want to see. And it's this system called Optics. And there's like 20 existing optics that you can either enable or disable for any given search. So you can click a little optic and say, I only want to search for posts on message boards, and it will only return message boards. Mm-hmm. You can do an optic where it's like, I don't want anything that's paywalled, and it will not return any websites that are known to have a paywall. You can say, I only want to see independent blogs. And I mean, this is sort of like a constantly updated list. There's obviously tons and tons of blogs, but it's like he's adding like hundreds of thousands of blogs that are run by one person, for example. And you can search in that specific way. And that's something that you can do kind of on Google by like doing a specific site search. But I don't know of any way on Google to say like, please only return sites without paywalls that are independently operated and also have a forum.
Yeah,
like you can do all of that.
Yeah, you
can't. And I think that's really interesting. Yeah. And his whole thing is like, I basically want to provide users the ability to select their own search experience, which is not really something you can do on any of these other search engines.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So it's an open source project. You know, theoretically someone could just fork it and make their entire own one, or as you say, add to this version as well. But for this one, how does it plan to monetize itself? You know, eventually it's going to need more hardware than the two machines, right?
Yeah, so he wants to sell subscriptions at some point and you would have no ads, but then he also wants to do advertising, but in the same way that DuckDuckGo does advertising, where it's like advertising against a specific search term and it doesn't know anything about the user. Whereas when someone buys an ad on Google, it's like you're buying a search term, but you're also buying an audience often. So it's like, I don't know how granular you can get in Google. I would imagine very granular, but it's like, I only want to advertise to people who previously searched for shoes and clicked and added it to cart, but then didn't buy it or something like that.
Right.
And so he hasn't enabled that stuff yet. I think, honestly, I think I would normally be a little bit more skeptical about sort of like the long-term project prospects of a project like this, but he is so active. It's like they are updating the code every single day. He's like all over this Discord responding to feedback. There's like a lot of excitement around it. And so I'm rooting for him. I also think that there's a decent chance that this just like keeps improving, because it's already pretty usable there. I don't think that you could use it as your only search engine, but if you're looking for like a different search experience, you can use it. And then like, if you can't find a specific website that you know should exist, you can like fall back on Google or Bing or something. But it's pretty impressive that one guy has done this so far.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we'll leave that particular story there, but as you mentioned Kagi, the other search engine, right? I think you're going to write about your experience with that in a bit more detail. So I imagine we'll probably end up talking about that on the podcast at a later date, and we can compare them and sort of see what is happening to search now as Google continues to get completely shit. All right. If you are listening to the free version of the podcast, I'll now play us out. But if you're a subscriber, we're going to talk about how a viral story about a botnet of toothbrushes spiraled out of control. You can subscribe and gain access to that content at 404media.co.
Can I talk about how that works just as a reminder? Because sometimes I hear like on the Slate podcast, like you can subscribe to our bonus stuff. And then I'm like, but how do I get it? So if you're just like interacting with this podcast as a free user out in the world and listening to it and are like, well, what does that mean? Like, how do I get the bonus content? When you become a paying subscriber of 404 Media, you get an email immediately that gives you a new link to subscribe to the bonus feed of the podcast. And on that feed, you will get the bonus segment as well as bonus episodes and no ads. And so you subscribe to that. It doesn't change your experience in any way, like how you listen to it. It works with all podcast apps. Mm-hmm. You just get a link and you put that link into your feed.
Yes. And every week
it's instantaneous.
Yes. Every week you'll get the bonus section. And then, I mean, tomorrow we'll be recording a subscribers only podcast as well that we do every so often. Yes. It's very streamlined. The platform we use is great for that. So if you do want to subscribe, you can gain access to that just as you ordinarily would at 404media.co. You just sign up there and yeah, then you'll get the link in your email. As a reminder, 404 Media is journalist-founded and supported by subscribers. If you wish to subscribe to 404 Media and directly support our work, please go to 404media.co. You'll get unlimited access to our articles and ad-free version of this podcast. You'll also get to listen to the subscribers-only section where we talk about a bonus story each week. Another way to support us is by leaving a 5-star rating and a review for the podcast. Here is one of those from user It Son of Them. I am more or less constantly sending 404 Media articles to my friends. The journalists who make up 404 Media do really phenomenal work. This podcast is also excellent. Thank you. Those sorts of reviews really help us out. This has been 404 Media. We'll see you again next week.